The format of this meeting is two 10-minute speakers followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Brooke.
Hi, my name is Brooke. I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober since the 18th of June, 2010. My sponsor's name is Scott. I'm a member of the Atlantic Group. I had the privilege of sponsoring a couple of guys. And a really big life today. I signed a temperance pledge when I was in fifth grade, and I took it very seriously. It was really easy to take seriously. I'm from a long line of like just like disgusting, stupid, fall down, drunk hillbillies. No offense to any other disgusting drunk hillbillies in the room. So from the age of like, you know, from the age of 10 to, you know, 17, I'm going to do this my way. You know, I had the privilege of speaking at the psychiatric prison on Randall's Island a couple months ago. And I said, I swore I was going to do it my way. And then I look up and all these guys are nodding with me. You know, all these guys that are never going to get out of there are nodding like in identification. It did not work. The day came that someone handed me a bottle and I drained 3 inches off the top of the bottle. And that's my drinking. That's my drinking for the next 13 years. I don't need to tell you much about my drinking. There's an incredible movie called Blue Velvet that'll tell you everything you need to know. I went to college in Michigan. I moved to New York 14 years ago. My drinking accelerated. Suddenly, you're 1,000 miles away from home. You can drink all hours of the day and night. No one there to tell you what not to. No one there to notice if you don't make it home. Things got worse and worse and worse. I started touring. Touring is great. Playing music is great because you're in a different city every night. You don't have to clean up the mess the next day. Things start to get bad. I don't really notice because I can keep a job. I can keep up appearances. You know, I was always working in restaurants where they encouraged day drinking. We called it wine tasting. You know, things got bad. A couple days after my 27th birthday, I attended one AA meeting downtown. I thought it was insanity. I decided again I was going to do this my way. I went out for 4 more years and tried my way. I did stop drinking for 2 solid years. I did stop drinking things out of bottles. But what that meant was, how to put this, I had to do like bong rips all day and drink a bottle of NyQuil to go to bed at night and mutilate my body and starve myself almost to death. But I didn't drink a beer for 2 years. And at the end of that day, I'm in a really terrible condition. And a doctor says, you're not going to be healthy unless you stop doing that other stuff. And so I stopped, and I started drinking again the same day. And I don't have to tell you. I only lasted another, 6 months. By the end of it, I'm, unemployable. You know, I couldn't get a job working for the cheese guy in Union Square 1 day a week. Undateable, forget about it. My friends are all starting to peel away and get married and, have kids and stuff. And my life was very, very small and, very, very dark, and very, very sad. And this night came, I'm drinking and I'm going, I had some stuff in my pocket that the combination of which with alcohol would have ended my life. And I set out to make that happen. And I drank very, very hard. And I woke up the next afternoon, and I had forgotten the other part of the combination. And I don't know about you, but when you're begging for death to come and take you, and death isn't even going to come, that's a very hard reality. And I had one friend in Alcoholics Anonymous. 2 months prior, I had told my ex-girlfriend that she was a disgusting drunk and that she needed to do something about it. And I said this with a beer in each hand, It didn't work for me, but it might work for you. And she was going to meetings, and I found found the courage to call and say, hey, are you going to a meeting today? Because I need to go to a meeting. And she said, sure. It was a Thursday. She said, you're not going to be comfortable with this, but I'm going to a meeting on 60th and Park, this beginner's meeting. You know, I said, 60th and Park in Manhattan. You know, she said, yes, you're not going to like it, but that's where I'm going. If you want to go there, you can come with me. And I didn't know what else to do, so I went. And, you think about, you have a very narrow window in which you can get sober. She had 5 days. When I had 10 days, she drank again and she never came back here. So you tell me, that's not a very big window. I'm 37 years old. That's 2 weeks. So there's my spot that I can get here. And did a lot of things that day that I didn't want to do. I stood up and I said I had one day. I took phone numbers from a bunch of dudes. They said, call anytime. I'm like, you bet, I sure will. the least scary guy, offered to take me to dinner. So I went to dinner. He told me a lot about his drinking. After a couple hours, he said, if you'd like help, if you'd like sponsorship, I'd be happy to help you. He's still my sponsor today. Took me about 3 months to realize, how much I did not like him. And it took me about another 2 years to realize how much he did not care. It was professed to me, so overstated to me right from the beginning to get in and work really hard and work really fast and do this. And if you're lucky, you'll stick around for a while. And, 90 days went by, like, it felt like 10 years, but it felt like that was last week when I stood up at this meeting on a Tuesday night and I said I had 90 days, and that felt like it was a week ago, and that's almost 6 years ago. So, jump in and do this stuff, and it tends to go by really fast. Life got really big. By the time I realized I couldn't stand, my sponsor and most really everybody. It's not just but I focus it on one guy. It occurred to me that if I went out and drank, I would have all this inventory that I was writing weighing on me. So I stayed. And then when that was done, you get the relief of the fifth step. And then when that's done, you don't understand six and seven, but you're trying. And I'm still trying really to understand how to work step six and seven. And then you write that list, and then you go, boy, I've got to make amends. It would be terrible to be, wasted in trying to make amends for all this stuff. So then you do that. And then you do step 10, and you're like, oh, and then when you make a mess, it's not so bad. And then I'm still learning on step 11. It was just recently suggested to me that I should, maybe not make my God bigger, because, I've got a God that, my idea of God from the schools I went to growing up and the churches that I went to were a God that's looking to squash me like a bug, I don't need a bigger God. I need a different conception of God. So I'm still learning about that, and I'm still searching about that. As fast as I worked on this stuff, I had over 3 years before somebody asked me to sponsor them. Now I've got the privilege of sponsoring a couple of guys today. I never realized, how much someone could hate me until, I'm reading reams of inventory, about me, I'm resentful at Brooke. He tells dumb jokes, And I said, well, you're clearly insane because I'm very funny and everybody thinks so. And you have this big life today that's just, me and my sponsor and a couple of the guys that I work with are reading the traditions right now because we want to go through the concepts. And not to brag, but that's like this amazingly beautiful thing in my life is that I look forward to 6:15 on Tuesday. And I do all kinds of crazy stuff, but there's just these moments that you get where it's like, oh, I can leave all that other stuff aside and we're going to read this stuff and talk about getting through this together. And that's what I've been given here today, is a chance to get through this with a bunch of other people that have the same problem as me. I'm about to run out of time. One thing I like to do is get up here on Tuesdays at 6:57 and just watch the meeting everybody kind of sit down, and everybody coming together and remember that there's hundreds of people in the room tonight that have the same thing that I suffer from. And as alone as I feel some days, Like, I get that moment, and it's like, wow. You know, we're all in this together. Thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Leela.
Hi, I'm Leela. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 1, 2006. And I'm going to be very succinct in what I have to say tonight. I would not be alive without AA. When I came into AA, I wanted to be dead. I thought my life was over. I hated who I'd become. And I didn't think there was any hope of my finding a life beyond my wildest dreams or even a good life. I come from a long line of alcoholics, and in my family there was a great deal of shame about alcoholics. It's predominantly on my mother's side of the family, but there was a lot of, in my family, if you were overweight, if you drank, if you owed money, you were a weak person and you should just slap yourself into attention and take care of these things and get with the program. So there wasn't a lot of sympathy growing up for this kind of disease. I didn't know until I came to the Atlantic Group 10 years ago that I had a disease. I thought I was a bad person. I think I drank alcoholically from the very beginning. I do remember being extremely uncomfortable in my skin, and something magical happened when I drank. All of a sudden, I was Cleopatra, and I could talk to that boy that all the girls wanted to go to the prom with, and he just was going to ask me. I knew it. And when he didn't, I had my friend alcohol to make myself feel better. And it worked for a very, very long time. Now, I believe I was born an alcoholic, but in the beginning, I could have one or two drinks and stop. By the end of my drinking, I couldn't. I was determined not to be like my grandfather and great-grandfather and my Uncle David, who was wonderful, except when you woke him up at 6 years old wanting to play and Uncle David had a headache and smelled funny. And Daddy didn't smell that way. So I thought, I just can't be like these people. And there came a point where I crossed that invisible line from having one or two drinks and stopping to needing to have a drink in order to function. Early in my drinking, I was told I was the life of the party. I'm a trained opera singer. I was told I would sing Casta Diva at 2 in the morning, and the police were called, and I enchanted them with my singing, or I probably thought I did with how drunk I was. By the end of my drinking, I was in blackouts. I was getting into fights with girls at bars over I don't know what. I was trying to pick up gay men who went from thinking that, you know, I was annoying to very, very concerned if I was going to get home all right. One of my worst drunks, I remember waking up somewhere in Brooklyn, which is fine, except I live in the Bronx, and it was 4 o'clock in the morning, and I have no idea where the last 5 hours went, and I have to be at work in 2 hours. Going home, throwing up, getting showering, getting dressed, and going to work. That was my last year of drinking. Christmas of 2005 was very, very difficult. I had a very contentious relationship with my mother. We fought all the time. And at the time, I worked for a religious organization, and I had time off between Christmas and New Year's. So after coming home from my hellacious Christmas with my mother, I decided to go to a bar and figure it out. I don't remember the third bar I went to other than the fact that I let a firefighter buy me a drink, and I think I was trying to flirt with him. And the next thing I remember was waking up in the lobby of my building with some guy who looked like a cab driver and my neighbor, and they were trying to figure out where I lived. The next thing I remember was it was 2 o'clock in the morning. I was half closed. I'd fallen on the floor. I had a bruise on my forehead, whatever. And my beloved dog, who I had rescued from the ASPCA, was crying in the corner and wouldn't come anywhere near me. And I thought, I'm just like my grandfather. I'm a failure. I'm a bad person. People had recommended I go to AA, and I didn't get the hint. I went to a couple of AA meetings and, you know, couldn't understand why you people were so happy because your life was over with. And I went out and I had a couple of drinks for you because you couldn't drink anymore. So I would drink for you. So, and I decided that if I cannot control my drinking between Christmas and New Year's, then I would turn myself into AA. On December 31st, like you turn yourself into the police. That's how I viewed it. Thank you. December 31st, 2005, I'd bought a bottle of champagne. I was going to have a drink at midnight and then the rest at New Year's dinner. That was gone by 9:30. The second bottle was gone by 11:30, and I did not see New Year's Day 2006. I walked in, I woke up, came to, whatever you want to call it, in the middle of the day on New Year's Day, January 1st, 2006. My dog was in the corner crying, wouldn't come anywhere near me. I thought, my life is over. I want to die. I'm on the fourth floor. If I throw myself out the window, will I kill myself? And I'm a failure and a bad person like my father. Well, not my father, excuse me, my grandfather and my great-grandfather and all my mother's relatives. And I thought, I have to turn myself into AA. But knowing nothing about AA, except that you people were happy and could never drink again, and I didn't understand you, I thought AA was a business. And I thought, it's New Year's Day. I'll wait a couple of days, and maybe they'll be open. And at the time, I worked on the east side, fairly close to this church. I waited about 3 or 4 days, and then I walked into an 11-step Atlanta group meeting that used to be over on 58th Street and 2nd Avenue. And I remember standing outside trying to get the courage to go in and tell everyone what a bad person I was and asking them to have pity on me. And I walked into the 11-step Atlanta group meeting, and all these women came up to me, one lady in particular who I won't name, very dear friend of mine. And they all said, welcome. They all said, one person said, how many days do you have? And I said, I'm 45 years old. I have no idea how many days I have. Why are you asking me that? And how do you know I'm new? And she said, when was the last time you had a drink? And I told her. And she said, you have 4 days sober. And for the first time, I said that I was Leela. I was an alcoholic, and I burst into tears. And many of the women came up to me afterwards and told me that there was beginners meetings, that this was an 11-step meeting. And I said, well, what step am I on? I think I'm on step zero. And they said, well, maybe you're on step one. And so I came to the beginners meeting, and I started this journey. I will never forget the first time I read the doctor's opinion with my AG sponsor, and I heard that I had a disease, that I had a physical allergy and a mental obsession, and in my case, I was spiritually lacking. I had no sense of a higher power or God. I wanted to be dead when I came in. The idea that I could pick my own concept of God was foreign. And I went through the steps, and I started to look at my behavior, and I started to look at my thinking, and I started to look at why I drank. It had nothing to do with me being morally good, bad, or indifferent. It had to do with my having an illness and my having a disease. And I want to spend the last moments that I have talking about solution. In the last 10 years, my life has gotten bigger. It has changed. It has been magnificent in many ways. It's also been very, very bittersweet. The job that I got sober in, I lost 3 years ago, and I have not been able to find other work. Through the benefits of this program, I went to EPRA and was able to get assistance going back to school, and I'm now at Hunter College studying the medical terminology and billing, and I'm not sure that that's what I want to do, but I'm saying yes to things, thank you, and yes to the universe, and yes to what God's going to bring me. The mother I had such a difficult time with, I held her hand while she was dying and I sang to her. I helped my father get into assisted living. I helped settle her estate and handled her things to the letter of what she wanted done, and I made a living amends to her. I don't know what God has in future for me, but I do know that if I come to AA, if I say yes to speaking, if I say yes to this program, if I understand I have a disease and my thinking is crazy, and it will always be crazy, then I have a chance of living a sober, good life. And I wouldn't be alive without you people. This was my first home group. All of you showed me the way to being a sober woman. And I don't want to die anymore. And that dog that was afraid of me, I had to put her down about 2 years ago. But I did it as a sober woman. And I want to say thank you and goodbye.